Good afternoon and welcome to Good News Updates with Living Compassion. I'm pleased to be joined this afternoon by Catherine, who is here to speak with us about her experience of the recent practice intensive. Welcome, Catherine.
Hi, Jen.
Hey. So it was the first one we had, hopefully the first of many, and I understand that you enjoyed it very much, so we thought it would be fun to have you just speak about your experience of that week-long focus we came together as a Sangha to participate in.
Well, I did enjoy it very much. It really struck a chord with me. The focus for the intensive was rest, and
yeah.
It was resting in this here now.
Mm-hmm.
This is what I took from it, okay?
Perfect. That's all we ever get, right?
Yeah, and I just right from the beginning, it just called to me because some part of me knew that this is what I needed, and the way the intensive worked was it was a week long,
mm-hmm.
and we got an email with the. Talking about the focus and the assignment, and
mm-hmm.
then we, whatever our experience of that was, we then texted a facilitator every day at noon,
mm-hmm.
and the focus was rest, as I said, and
which in itself is so beautiful, isn't it? A practice intensive,
yeah.
You know, there could be kind of this, all right. Here comes the practice intensive, right? You know, you can just be conditioning, like, okay, I'm going to try hard. And then the email comes out that says that the focus is rest.
Right, right. Okay, so
love
relax.
It.
So
yeah.
Get all ready
yeah.
and relax.
Yeah,
it was it was perfect. And the assignment that came out, that talked about the focus, was so beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
And it... of course, the rest we need is from conditioning, and I guess my experience right off the bat was, or what I realized that what I was really wanting in my life was time carved out to just rest in this here now, to just be, and there might be some activity with that.
Mm-hmm.
That perhaps supported that,
mm-hmm.
or some activity that I really that I wanted to do from the heart,
mm-hmm.
and but it, that it would be restful, it would be easy,
yeah.
it would be relaxed, and this was seemed to me to be the focus. I mean, the focus was just speaking to that.
Go ahead.
I'm just
Was there more? Because I'm seeing so much as you're talking, but I'm restraining myself because I want to hear everything you have to say about it.
Well, I ended up after it was over. At the end of it, we had a conference call with Sherry, and she gave Ashwini the credit, for coming up with the focus. And so I emailed Ashwini and said, thank you, and that I believe this was the rest I was born to have. And I really feel that way. I feel that when I started practicing the rest that we were
mm-hmm.
asked to practice,
mm-hmm.
it just felt like, well, this is what it's about.
Yeah.
This is what I want. This is what the heart wants. This is really what I'm living for.
Yes. And that willingness to practice what you were directed to practice is what allowed you to receive it.
Mhm.
You know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's really true. And when we got the focus, the email
mm-hmm.
with the focus, and there were some suggestions of possible practices. And
mm-hmm.
they all look good. They included a walk under the stars was one of them. And I thought, oh, that sounds so beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
And or maybe relaxing with a cup of tea.
Mm-hmm.
having our own little tea ceremony there, our tea mm-hmm. ritual, and or even carving out an entire day of resting in this here now. And they all just sounded so beautiful. And what was coming up for me at the time was, will I really stick to this? I want a ritual that I will really stick to. And my conditioning has me, like it seems to have a lot of people, just running around kind of all the time, busy with a to-do list, mm-hmm. and just never time to just sit, or even if I'm not sitting, but just being still. And so I was a little nervous that I was not going to keep my commitment to doing the ritual. So I picked a ritual. We were supposed to text every day at noon, our facilitators. Mm-hmm. And so I decided that at noon every day I would do my ritual, and then I would text.
Oh. Yeah, perfect.
And so, yeah, perfect. So it was a signal for me to, oh, it's noon. Now I have to, now it's time to do the ritual. I need to do that because I want to text. And sometimes the practice I did, the ritual or practice, was 5 or 10 minutes. Sometimes it was 1 minute.
Mm-hmm.
But it mm-hmm. was always really, restful.
You know what's so beautiful about that is, just as you laid that out, I just got such a sense of how supported that is to the human.
Mm-hmm.
It's the antithesis of what conditioning is constantly setting us up for failure. You know,
mm-hmm.
I mean, it doesn't seem that way. We're supposed to not notice that. it's supposed
yeah.
to seem like, like you said, the to-do list. And come on, Catherine, there's more to do. Let's go.
Yeah.
You know, supposedly it's helpful. But it's completely a setup for failure. And that intuitive sensing, that kind of being present to the assignment that I'm projecting as you're talking, and from that comes the information from life of how to set it up as a complete success for the human. Oh, well, okay, there might be forgetting. Well, let's tie it to the time we're going to text. And then let's take away all standards of whether it's a minute or 5 minutes or 10 minutes. It's just the commitment to do it. That's the whole thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's really true. And I really did have to let go of the standards because I knew there would be failure if I stuck to the
right.
standards. And I found that at first I did try to make it, the practice was to, my practice was going to be going outside. And, it was April, it was spring, it was beautiful, spring was coming, the bluebells were out, the jonquils
mm-hmm.
were out. So go out into my yard and
mm-hmm.
just practice resting in this here now and being out there and being present. And so at first I had to be in this beautiful place kind of thing. So I did
mm-hmm.
sort of have a standard. And then mm-hmm. as the week wore on, one day I was walking from the grocery store to my car in the parking lot.
Uh-huh.
And, oh, it's noon. And so I got to my car, and it was a sunny day. It was a beautiful day. And so I stood by my car and closed my eyes and just let the sun warm my face and for a few seconds. And then I opened my eyes, and I'm looking at traffic and an interstate and concrete and asphalt, and it was beautiful.
Yeah,
I
got goosebumps. Yeah.
Yeah,
and life and its wisdom that puts you in that place at noon. So you get to see that, in fact, it isn't conditional.
Mhm.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
So it was a wonderful week for me, and I love the facilitation I got at one point. I texted about going to work and feeling that work was not going to be restful, and because of the conditioning I have around work. And the response was, right, conditioning isn't restful, but watching it can be.
Yeah.
And so I went to work and watched it. And it was very restful. So the facilitating really helped.
Yeah. Well, yes, facilitating really helps. And the willingness, go back to what you started with, the willingness to receive the guidance is kind of the whole deal.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, really is. And I, you know, as you were talking early on, I'm really going to take this away for myself, that how beautifully you underlined that what's restful is this here and now, and that anything we're doing can be restful because it's the not being with what we're with that's so stressful. It's the mm-hmm. I'm doing the dishes, but I'm thinking about all the other things I have to do right after I do the dishes, or I'm taking the dog for a walk, but I'm thinking about how I have to do the dishes. But in fact, if we're only doing what we're doing, it's always restful because mm-hmm. busy is the story. It lives in a conversation.
It's relaxing and easy, and it's mm-hmm. and that the mind buzz, the constant what you've got to do and what about this and all that is just so draining.
Yeah.
It's not. I mean, it might make me tired, but it's it won't have me rested. So.
Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah.
Well, Catherine, thank you so much for being with us and telling us about your experience. I'm really looking forward to the next one.
Me too. So thank you.
All right. Take good care.
Okay. Good night.
All right, Michael. We'll turn it over to you and Sherry.
Okay, great. Thank you, Jen, and thank you, Catherine. Good afternoon, and welcome to Open Air with Sherry Huber. Good afternoon, Sherry.
Good afternoon, Michael.
Great to have you back.
Thank you. It's good to be back.
It's
always good to be back. It's always good to be wherever we are, though, isn't it?
Yes. Yeah.
So it was good to be where I was, and it's good to be here, because when I was there, I was still here. So we just can't lose, can we?
Yes, that's great.
How are you doing?
I'm good. I'm beyond good. I'm great. I'm wonderful. I'm grateful for practice, and I understand you have something you'd like to share with us.
Yeah, I do. Jen, a couple of times, said with Catherine, referred to willingness. And so more than like to talk about, I think, it's a willingness to talk about. And I'm hoping that it's kind of it's an ongoing practice conversation. And I hope people will be in conversation with me about it. Because it's really important to me, and I will put that out right from the beginning, that this is really important to me in terms of my practice, and I can say a little bit about that, and if I forget, you'll remind me to bring it back to how this the level of concern that I have is primarily about my practice. A few months ago, I put out an offer to the Sangha to do a year-long money retreat. And people had been asking me to do a retreat like that for years, as a matter of fact. And I put it out, and some people responded, and an awful lot of people didn't respond. And the reason that they didn't respond actually was that I think that I told them what it was going to be, what we were going to be doing, and that we were going to be starting a business. And people said, I don't want to do that. I actually did that, put it out again, and didn't tell people what it was and got a completely different response. But that's kind of an aside. And so we have been doing this now for several months, and it is very possibly, I think that this is a true statement, that it's the most transformative process of practice that I've ever been involved in. And as you know, over the last 35 years, I've been involved in some pretty transformational processes in terms of practice. And so the reason that this one is so different for people, for the people who are doing it, is because they're having a chance to see egocentric karmic conditioning self-hate through a lens that is completely different from the lens that they're usually looking at it through. So when we have egocentric karmic conditioning operating in our regular lives, we don't actually see it because we so believe that what it says is so. Now, this is not unusual. This is the drum I beat on constantly. Okay, so people are looking moment by moment by moment to conditioned mind to define their reality. And so when conditioned mind says, I really, really don't want to do that, people go, yeah, I really don't want to do that, having no idea that it's not, they're not the ones making that decision. They're listening to conditioned mind. Conditioned mind is making the decision, and they're being controlled. But people can't see it because it's just the expression, you know, the water you swim in. It's just how it is. It's what I know. It's how I know. It's what I believe. It's what's true. It's my experience. And having no way of seeing that that is actually not my experience, it's conditioned mind's experience, and I believe that it's me. So people who are doing this project with me are having a chance to have an experience of themselves and their lives that enables them to see what is them and what is, we could say, what is authenticity and what is egocentric karmic conditioning self-hate in a completely new and different way. And so I heard the story. We talk, much like the radio show, a couple of times a week, the group of people who are doing this retreat. And one of the, this is one of the stories that is very much the kind of story that we hear. And I wanted people to hear it because I hear rumors that people are wondering why the heck I'm doing this. What does this have to do with awareness practice? This makes no sense at all. This is completely crazy, and we're pretty sure that Sherry has finally just gone off the rails completely. Okay, so here's the story to give a little picture of what it is that we're doing with this retreat. Gal and her husband go out to dinner, and the gal is a part of this retreat. She's been in it for 2 or 3 months now, and is quite immersed in it, and going through the changes that everybody goes through when they get started in it. And so they go out to dinner, and they're sitting there in the restaurant, and they hear this guy come in. He's in a wheelchair. He comes in, and he says to the waitress, now, you know, this is my version of her story, but he says to the waitress, you know, I just had to get out of the house. I had to get around people. And so she hears him say that, and she says to the waitress, do you think he'd be open to having dinner with us? And she said, well, I bet he would. You could ask him. And so they asked him if he would like to join them for dinner. And he did. And they had a wonderful time. And when it came time to pay the check, she just, you know, paid for her husband and their new friend. And the guy left the restaurant. And the people in the restaurant, the staff in the restaurant, came over and said, that was amazing. You have, one person said, you've restored my faith in humanity. That was, you know, and they just couldn't say enough good stuff about how kind and generous this whole thing was. And so what she said is, well, this is actually really new behavior for me. I'm not the kind of person who does this kind of thing. But I'm engaged in this new business venture that I've started, and it's just changing everything about me. I find myself just really open and interested in people and curious and I could even say more kind. And so they all said their goodnights, and before she left, she went to use the restroom. And the waitress came into the restroom, and she said, "Will you tell me about the business that you're in? Because I want to be in a business like that. I hate my job."
Wow. Wow.
So, yeah. So I just want to put it out there. And the reason that I want to put it out there is that this is the challenge for people who are doing awareness practice. I want you to look at what goes on in your mind, and we could say conditioned mind, but what is the conversation about that? What is the conversation that causes us to say no to things that could change our lives? Okay? So, you know, if I put out a retreat it's whatever it is, and people sign up for the retreat and they do the retreat and they have whatever experience they have, and they are powerful, powerful experiences that people have on retreat. I'm not denying that. But a retreat that goes on for a year and challenges everything that everybody has experienced about themselves, and the process that would say no to that, I just want people to get in touch with the process. Okay? So I remembered, Michael, to bring it back to my practice. Because what I have devoted my life to is assisting people to wake up and end suffering. And I want to be sure that I'm doing the very best job that I can of providing that opportunity for people. And if what I'm doing is encouraging people to do an awareness practice that is only what they're allowed to do if conditioned mind, if ego says it's okay, and they're not allowed to do whatever practice conditioned mind or ego says they can't do, then I have to sit still with that long and hard and see what a contribution I am or I am not making to the well-being of people in Sangha, and what kind of a contribution I am making or not making to the world at large. So that's what I wanted to say to people. It's not anything other than people just looking to see how they are in relationship to their awareness practice, and to, my concern is that if I am doing something that makes people comfortable, makes people more able to enjoy their lives, but doesn't lead them toward ending suffering, then I'm doing harm. And I would take that very, very seriously. So, that's the conversation. I hope people will let me know. The part of this this business that we're in, one of the things that is happening with that is Princeton University has partnered with this this other company that we know about to bring to market a brain health supplement. They've researched, they've been doing research on this at Princeton for 20 years, and they're just bringing it to market. And I actually wrote an email to a number of people telling them about this and expressing my wish that everybody in the world who is concerned about their mind, about the health of the brain and the well-being of all that that means for our well-being would talk to me about this. And just about nobody has. And that, that makes me sad because it makes me feel like, people are listening to things that aren't taking good care of them. And then last night I heard from someone who is in practice who just got word about her 57-year-old sister, 57. And 6 months ago, they started noticing that there was something not quite right with her mind, And a couple of days ago, she asked her husband, do you think this means that I'm going to have to go into a home with my mother? And she had forgotten that her mother died over a year ago, age 57. So,
wow.
Again, I just ask people, when you encounter something that has a possibility of taking care of you, and you listen to a conversation that says, oh, no, that's nonsense, or that's a con, or that's a scam, or that's not going to work, or it's not going to work for you, or that's just silly, that's a waste of money. Whatever karmic conditioning does, I'm going to ask people to look and listen really closely to that conversation, because that's the conversation of suffering. And it doesn't matter what that conversation is focused on. That's the conversation of suffering. That's the conversation that enables ego to control people throughout their lives. And so it's not about this product. It's not about brain health. It's not about, for me, it's not about any of those things. I mean, I'm going to keep telling people about these things because I want people to know about all the good stuff that I encounter. When somebody find something that they consider good stuff, I want them to tell me. And because I want to say yes to everything that has a possibility of taking me away from suffering. And I want to share that with everybody else because I want the same possibility for everybody. So what this is about is bringing a sharper spotlight on the conversation in the head that is saying, do this, don't do that. Okay? That's all I want out of this. And, of course, you know, again, for me to look and see whether what I'm doing is assisting people to get that spotlight on that conversation and make those choices that lead them away from suffering and toward freedom, or if something that I'm doing is contributing to a complacency, to a sense of, you know, life is good. I'm happy. Everything is going well. Life is good. I'm happy. Everything is going well. Is not the same as ending suffering. And I would be remiss if I didn't point that out to people. It is my job description, in fact, to point that out to people. So that's that. And I bet you have some announcements for us, and then we can have a conversation, and hopefully people will let me know what they see about all this.
Can I share a brief comment?
Please.
It really spoke to me what you said at the end there and also earlier on. With practice, it's given me really extraordinary skills to navigate in the world, and as you say, you know, a lot of the content of life has become much easier and more. I have more skills to approach it,
uh-huh.
And yeah, and definitely, there's a sense of comfort and complacency, and life is good. And but it's really great to see the next level of practice, as you're pointing at, in terms of what's possible for us, for me.
Yes, yes. And, you know, one of the things with the story of the woman and her husband having dinner and the chap who had dinner with them, we can get very, very happy and comfortable. As you say, we have a ton of skills in this practice to make life work, to make things very, very easy. There's a whole world of people out there who don't have the opportunity because they don't know that it exists. And if we allow ourselves to get focused on a nice, comfortable, easy life for me, and we're not making that opportunity available to others simply through being in the world the way we know it's possible for human beings to be, i.e. living without suffering, then that is that's not the point of practice either. That's not what the Buddha taught. The Buddha didn't teach us to end suffering as a way of having a better, more comfortable life for ourselves. It's a Sangha experience and Sangha is everybody and everything.
Amen, sister.
All right. Thank you, brother.
Thank you. And I do have announcements here. Mornings with the Mentor group coaching offers participants the opportunity to experience what it is like to start the day immersed in unconditional love and acceptance.
Mm-hmm.
And a new session starts June 10th. And so to register, visit sanghamarket.com.
All right.
And don't miss the chance to be part of the new Enneagram-based email class that starts this Friday. You, Sherry, will lead a fun exploration of how conditioning hijacks our communications.
Mm-hmm. That kind of goes along, doesn't it? We can explore how the various enneatypes here condition conversations in the head that hijack our lives. Yeah.
Yes. And the new retreat, In This Way I Do Most Deeply Vow to Train Myself, focuses on the importance of spiritual training in practice. It's offered mm-hmm. July 6th through 10th in Menlo Park, California. That's the San Francisco Bay Area. And August 31st through September 4th in Bethlehem, Pennsylvania.
Mm-hmm.
And for these and all other opportunities, visit schedule.livingcompassion.org.
Aha, a good place to go.
Yes, and our reminders today to make a show to indicate your desire to talk with Sherry today, press *6 and then 1, and focus on one topic, please, in about 5 minutes. And here we go, Sherry.
All right. Thanks, Michael.
Thank you. First caller, you are now live on the air. Would you please introduce yourself?
Hey there, Sherry and Michael. This is Sherry in San Francisco.
Well, hello. Hi. How are you?
You know, I knew that I was going to be first today.
And this is not the first time you've been first.
I know. And you know.
Yeah.
I have a note on my weekly, like, things I really want to do this week list that
uh-huh.
says, connect with Sherry about the email she sent last week. and so the whole time you were talking, I was just like, this is amazing. You know, like, how life just, it provides.
Yes.
Do you know?
Yes. Yep. Yep, I do. I do. I do. And it's when I said to Michael, you know, like to talk about, willing to talk about, you know, that there it is. You know, life presents and we say yes, right? So there it is. It's orchestrating all the time. It's putting everything in place for us all the time. We still have the option of saying no, but it's a very silly thing to do, really.
Well, yeah, and what I find so beautiful, I was visiting my mom, actually, when the emails came in, and I wasn't really paying much attention to any of my emails unless, you know, they were, you know, urgent ones. But here's the thing. So it was like I was meditating, I think it was on Sunday morning, and it just dropped in. Do you know, it, like, out of all the, like, bazillion emails that had come in during that time, you know, something just dropped in during meditation. Was like, hey, you know, did you notice that email came from the guide? Like, you know? And I just I'm just amazed at just, you know, even, it's like such a miracle the way that I guess I'm just stuck on that thing, though, the way that life just shows up and provides and
yes.
like, lights up things for us.
Yes. Yes. Which it's doing all the time, isn't it?
Yeah.
We're very trained not to see it, but it's doing it all the time. And there's a really simple reason for it. You know, in the West especially, we're conditioned to believe deeply in the world of opposites, that there is a something that is doing something, and that something that's doing it is different from us. But if we take the Buddha's view, then the intelligence that animates all. It's all one intelligence. So in the same way that we walk around, and as you said, you know, it just drops in. There was that email. Okay. Now, when you're going around in your life, you can think, you know, well, I need to pick Cain up at school, and while I'm out, I could stop by and get the such and such. Oh, that reminds me, I need to call. Right? I mean, isn't that kind of the way conditioned mind works? Yeah?
Yep.
And so if we stay with what drops in, then we can see how the intelligence is informing. But what happens to us is that information turns into the conversation in conditioned mind that makes things into to-do lists and into stress and into pressure and into I don't want to or that's too hard or negotiating, right? All of that stuff that goes on in conditioned mind. But behind that, when we're present, we can watch how the intelligence is just firing. Right? And it's informing everything about everything all the time.
Wow. Yeah.
And it's very big. It's very big and it's very simple and terribly sweet.
And, you know, no doubt, like, I saw, you know, fortunately I was meditating when it dropped in, so it just, you know, it dropped in, and then, you know, afterwards, I keep my list of things I want to do during the week, and I jotted it down, you know, connect. But, you know, I could see, I didn't let it go there, but just exactly what you said, how conditioning wanted to get into this whole conversation. Well, what are you going to say?
Yeah.
Well, how are you going to, well, what about this? Well, how do you feel? Well, what's going on? And I was just like, no. That's not, I'm sure
not
that's
where
not
we're going.
That's not what we're doing. I'm pretty mm-hmm. sure of that, you know.
yeah.
Because it was just this, like, just blah 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 blah. And what about? And what about? And I was like, no. That's not. I'm not interested in that. I'm interested in, like, okay, life dropped us in, you know. And then, it's so beautiful that it's like, you know. Then I was like, I've been trying to get on actually for a long time. I haven't been able to get on the show, and I've been calling, and it's like. When you started talking about it, I was like, oh, good, I'm going to get on this time.
It's a sign. It's an omen.
Especially, I'll tell you what, especially because, as you can guess, you know, conditioning did not want me. Actually, conditioning said, hang up right now. Hang up right now.
Yes.
You know, because you're going to be embarrassed because you haven't, you know, followed through and you're the blah, blah, blah. And I was like, what? No, what? This is life showing up for me.
Yes, this is all really quite, quite perfect. And the thing, again, which we know, but it's easy to lose sight of this. Those voices are constantly talking about fear and loss and lack and deprivation and something wrong and it's just constantly focused on what we would call the negative, right? That's the world, that's its world, and that's the world that it wants to create for a human being. And, of course, for a lot of people, the way that has morphed is into being skeptical and cynical and clever and being
mm-hmm.
able to see what's wrong with everything and how, you know, I'm not duped by this kind of stuff. And this is, you know, and ego is very clever. And, of course, what we don't realize is that it is ego, and its cleverness is supporting it, but the cleverness is not supporting us.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, and what really spoke to me so much, I mean, a lot of what you said tonight, but what really, you know, kind of lit up for me is also that thing about, you know, what is it allowing us to do in practice, and what is it not allowing us to do, and how is it doing that? You know what I mean? Like, how is that happening? Like that, I was like, yeah, you know, like what?
Yes.
Oh, you know, who's pulling who's pulling the strings here?
Exactly. And just that, you know, that gap is enormous, because almost everybody on the planet never questions the conclusions they come to, the opinions that they hold, the decisions that they make. They're not questioned. It's me. I'm deciding. This is what I want. This is what I like. This is what I choose. But it's not.
Mm-hmm. Why?
Yeah. And freedom is realizing that process, because when we recognize that process and we start watching it, we start having space between us and that system, and that's the beginning of freedom.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I just wanted to say the other thing that it's like was so important for me to hear, so important, is because I'm one of those people that I've been in practice a long time, and my life has, you know, just changed so much. I'm one of those people who's like, you know, I'm healthy, I'm happy, I have, you know, I have a really good life. And so, you know, hearing you talk about, you know, that place of complacency versus ending suffering, that's like, that was also really, really huge.
Yeah, because it's great to have a great life. It's really great to have a great life. You know, one of the things that I say constantly to people, they just kind of look at me like, yeah, is you're going to die, right? And it's like, yeah, but God, that's just, do we have to be morbid all the time? I mean, you know, but I think about that woman, okay, 57 years old. Now, that's not very old. And most people in this sangha can look at that and say, yeah, that's not that far in the future for me. Or they can look back and say, well, that's actually a long ways in the past for me. But you're going along, you're 57 years old, and all of a sudden you realize you're losing your mind. Yeah? I mean, suddenly things get very real, very fast for you, for everyone around you, everyone who loves you. And what we want to look at in this is, how prepared am I for that moment?
Yes.
Because that moment is going to come for all of us in some form or another. Now, does that mean you can't have a happy life in the interim? No. It means you can have a life that is happier than you can even imagine, because you're not denying something. You're not living in fear and avoidance and opinions and conclusions and decisions made by a system that doesn't have your well-being at anywhere on its to-do list. Right? So when we are open and we know that there is nothing that's going to come at us that we're not going to be able to be all right with, now have your beautiful, happy life and enjoy it. Mm-hmm. And you will be a gift to everyone who comes in contact with you. Because the fact that you know that is obvious to people, even if they don't know what it is that they're experiencing. They will know that you're not afraid. They will know that you're completely open. They will know that you're absolutely here, and it will change them.
Wow. I have to say, just one. I mean, that was the other like wild synchronicity of all of this, is that a couple weeks ago I had this moment where I couldn't remember my social security number, and I ended up writing a whole piece about it for my blog because it was just an amazing moment, you know, that, mm-hmm. that took me exactly, you know, I happen to also have a friend who has early onset dementia. And so all of this, you know how it's like,
yeah,
it's sort of, yeah, it's all like interwoven for me, this whole conversation and everything you're saying. I mean, yeah.
Mm-hmm. It's good.
Yeah, so thank you for this.
Oh,
and,
you are so welcome. Thank you. Yeah.
I look forward to
I'll look forward to hearing from you.
I was just going to say, I look forward to continuing the conversation.
Okay, great. Thank you, Sherry. Good night.
Thanks for joining us, Sherry. And Sherry Huber, we're going to break now and hear from our sponsor, and then we'll be right back.
All right. Thank you.
You're welcome.
What if you lived with your soul as your pilot? What skies would you fly? How wide would you open? What would you sing if you gave voice to your beautiful heart?
This great song by Trish Bruxford Culligan invites us to give voice to our hearts. Simply Celebrate offers you a variety of ways to express your heart, and one of those is by celebrating the people you love. Our one-of-a-kind customized celebration books are like magic mirrors that reflect all of the laughter, adventures, and delight that friends and family share. Clients tell us that this is the best gift ever. Give voice to your heart and give a gift of love that lasts a lifetime. Visit simplycelebrate.net and turn ordinary days into an extraordinary life.
Welcome back to Open Air. And we have another caller here, Sherry.
All right. Thanks, Michael.
Sure. Next caller, you are now live on the air. And would you please introduce yourself?
Hi. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Yes.
Oh. Amazing.
You sound like you're kind of in an echo chamber,
really?
But we can hear you.
Let me.
Are you on speaker?
Is that any better?
Well, you're perfectly hearable. So let's just go with it. How about that?
Okay.
It's getting better with every word.
Okay, I just turned the volume down, so that's helped. Okay, good. I'm glad.
Oh, good.
So my name is Sharon, and I am kind of new to your work, Sherry, but I'm going to be at the retreat in July in North Carolina.
Oh, lovely.
Yeah, I'm really looking forward to it. And I have a question, which is, I've been having a really hard time for over a year now after a really kind of breakup that ended up being traumatic for me, and I'm interested in the recording and listening and how I might apply that to what's been going on for me. It's been kind of shocking to my system. I've always kind of felt myself to be pretty stable and together, and in the last year I've just had panic attacks and just, you know, been fairly dysfunctional. Like I keep, you know, feeling like I want my life back. And part of it is I feel like sort of a just really, really hurt. And the person that I split up with lives right in my area and is with someone else. So I'm a little bit agoraphobic because I'm afraid of running into them. And mm-hmm. it's a terrible, terrible feeling. So I do have, like, I've been working with meditation and the record and listen, and I have, like, glimpses of freedom and glimpses of happiness and, like, you know, sort of who I am outside of this, and I can feel almost like happiness and joy are so close, But mm-hmm. the conditioned mind is so powerful on this topic that I get kind of swept back into a hell realm really easily.
Yeah. Yeah.
So,
yes. May I?
Yes, please.
Yeah, the thing about it is what's universal about what you're saying is the process of it, right? That what happens with egocentric karmic conditioning, self-hate, which is why I'm on such a campaign constantly to get people to see it for what it is. It's okay as long as we are fairly agreeable, as long as we do what it says and you know, don't get too far out of line, then the relationship can be fairly, tolerable, okay? But then when there's an opportunity like this, when something happens that is really painful, that there's trauma, there's great loss, in anything that produces fear, that sort of thing, then it swoops in to take full advantage of the suffering that a person experiences and to make that suffering as intense as possible. Yeah? So for you, it's this breakup. Now, I'm telling you this because simply to kind of offer the perspective that this is what it is for you. For somebody else, it would be the loss of a job. For somebody else, it would be a health issue. For somebody else, it would be what's going on with a child. For somebody else, it's losing money in some way. You know, whatever will produce the maximum amount of suffering for a human being is what that system is going to go after.
Mm-hmm.
Are you with me on that?
I am, yeah.
Yeah. It's because, yeah, you are, because it's what you're living. So as long as we know what's happening, we can have, I think, a more confidence in going up against it.
Mm-hmm.
So all that's happening is that system is trying to wring all of the suffering juice out of you that it can. And your way out of that is not to give it attention.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So as you've noticed, you'll be going along, things are feeling a little bit better, and then here comes the thought. Blah,
yeah.
Blah, 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 blah. Right? And then there's the knife to your heart or the kick to your solar plexus or however you feel that, and you're in a hell state again. So you're right. Recording and listening is your best ally at this point. And here's my encouragement. So you said that you feel glimpses of joy or happiness or that sort of thing, that it feels like it's really close by.
Yes.
And so what you want to do is make recordings of that. You want to record what is joyful in this world, what is beautiful, what you love, what makes you happy, what you're grateful for. Okay? Every thing that brings you back to yourself, brings you back to your heart, you want to record about it. And you want to listen to those recordings as nonstop as humanly possible.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah? So what you're doing is closing down the aperture that gives that system access to you.
Mm-hmm. I understand.
Yeah.
I read something, I think it was on your blog or something, I forget where, but it said something about the extent to which something very powerful and positive is trying to break through is the mm-hmm. extent to which the conditioned mind will have a complete fit and tantrum.
That's right.
So I'm wondering about, like, this particular kind of mental breakdown of mine. I guess it feels good to think of it that way, you know, that...
Yes.
And...
Yes.
You know, that the reason why there's so much suffering is because there's something really powerful and beautiful trying to break through that my conditioned mind is freaked out about.
Yes, absolutely. And the thing that we can know so clearly in a situation like this is how much that conditioning is not on your side.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Because anything that didn't just hate you would be rooting for you to get past this, get you focused mm-hmm. on your life now and all the things that are open to you and all the possibilities and what's available. And, you know, that's what anybody who cared about you at all would be focused
would want.
On. Yeah. Would want for you. Yeah, good. That's over. Put it behind you. You know, thank God. Could have gone on for another 10 years and then this happened. Thank God that's you're finished with that. Okay, here's what we can do, right? Now there's the enthusiasm, the life force, but that's what conditioning is sucking out, right? It's sucking all the life force out of you every time you give it attention. Yeah? So just realizing that. Yeah,
I will. What do you think about, like, the part of me that feels so hurt and sort of treating that part of me with lots of kindness and sweetness? I mean, is that empowering the conditioned mind, or?
Well, here's the thing, Sharon. What you want to be sure of is that it is a legitimate part of you that feels so hurt. So I'm sure there's somebody, you know, that part of your response to this is disappointment and betrayal and hurt and whatever those, you know, whatever that is. So lots and lots of different kind of nuanced emotions that go with something like this.
Mm-hmm.
But it's also a place where conditioning will come in and masquerade as someone who's really hurt to keep the attention there constantly.
So how do I tell the...
Yes, and you will. In the recordings, you'll hear the difference. So one of the things that we have been playing with in practice a lot is that you put the recorder in your right hand, and you let that person who feels hurt talk about her hurt. Just really get into it. Say everything that there is to say about it. Describe, you know, whatever it is that goes on. And then you turn the recorder off and you sit with that for a few minutes, you know, just taking that in. And then you put the recorder in the left hand and you listen to what she said. You really hear her. Turn the recorder off, sit with that for a moment, and then when you turn it back on, let the mentor, let the wisdom and compassion that animates you speak to her, comfort her, care for her.
Okay, that sounds so great. I guess I still don't understand how I would be able to tell if that hurt one is conditioned mind or
okay.
not.
Here's the deal.
Okay.
If she does not want to be comforted, if she doesn't want to move on, if she doesn't want the conversation to turn from I'm so hurt to what's possible for me now, you can know it's conditioning.
Okay.
If it's a legitimate hurt, then it'll be there, it'll be experienced, and the grieving will be there, and then it'll be time to move on.
So it will receive the comforting of the mentor.
Yes. Yep.
If it's
exactly
legitimate.
So. Uh-huh. If it's legitimate. Yep.
Okay.
Now, with this kind of thing, as we know, any time we have a, you know, a big loss in our lives, it can cycle back around. You know, you'll be somewhere and you'll hear a song. It'll remind you of that person, and there's a stab to the heart, you know. And that's just a natural part of things. It's when it's the conversation that we're watching out for.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the wanting to go over it, wanting to tell the story, wanting to, you know, get upset, wanting to, that's what we're not doing.
Mm-hmm. Do you have a suggestion? One problem I have is that I'm always scanning to see about whether I see his car. And it's like obsessive compulsive, you know? Like,
yeah.
Do you have a suggestion for when I'm like driving around kind of?
Yes, scanning? Don't do it.
Okay.
Okay. That, and that sounds funny, but you really can do it. So when I first discovered the voices of self-hate, I would be coming back from a workshop and they start doing a replay of everything I hadn't said or had said wrong or whatever. And I finally, I got it, that this is really not helping me here. And I just said, no, I am not going to listen to that.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't. I didn't.
Okay.
So you can say, just, you know, kind of in a, almost like you're talking to a child, no, we're not doing that. I am not doing that. And
mm-hmm.
so you start taking different directions to minimize the chances. And here's one, Sharon, that you can do. Every time you see a car that's like his, or you think it's his car or whatever, and that stuff starts, you just go to, I choose unconditional love. I choose to be here. I choose to be in this moment. I choose to be with my breath. I choose to be in my body. I choose to be with the beauty of nature around me. And you just go on like that until there's no more interest on the part of conditioned mind to try to get you to look at the car.
This is so helpful. I can't tell you.
Good.
I'm so excited to be going to this retreat this summer. And
yes.
Yeah.
Well, and stick with us. Stick with us, right? Keep me posted, because there's a lot of ground to be covered between now and that retreat.
Yes,
yeah?
I will stick with it. So I
very
much appreciate it. Thank you so much.
Oh, you're so welcome. Good night.
Okay, good night.
Thanks for joining us, Sharon. And Sherry, I think we have time for one more caller here.
All right, good. Thank you.
Sure. Next caller, you are now live on the air, and would you please introduce yourself?
Hi, my name's Brett.
Hi, Brett.
Hi.
What's going on?
I have a question about your experience with bipolar disorder.
Mm-hmm.
There was, I believe there was something in one of your books that's where you had an anecdote about you were experiencing these surges in energy and the dives in energy, and you were talking to your teacher, and I think the advisement was to watch it.
Mm-hmm.
And you had stated something about that this was a bipolar thing in your brain functioning that you hadn't received treatment for.
Mm-hmm.
Is that correct?
Yes, I wrote a book called The Depression Book.
Yeah.
And a lot of those stories are in that. Uh-huh.
Okay.
Yeah.
I just want to make sure.
Yeah,
I
was
right.
I was bipolar before it had a name or medication.
Yeah.
Beat the rush.
Trendsetter.
Trendsetter, I'm telling you. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So my question is, I went without the drugs for 4 years, the psych drugs, and I found that I was able to keep the mania from happening as long as I was sleeping. I just learned, at least for my physiology, if you're sleeping, you can't be manic,
mm-hmm.
at least if you're sleeping well and sleeping regularly. So that wasn't so much an issue. The issue was the depressive aspect of it. So I could be fine off the drugs and not get manic, but the depression made it so that essentially I lost about 10 years of my life, you know, all my practical concerns to the depression. So I guess what I'm trying to ask is, I'm trying to figure out if there's a way that I can transition off of these things again and address that depressive component without, you know, sort of beating it to death with psychiatric meds, because those eventually don't work, and you have to switch
right.
to a different one, or you have to switch
right.
dosages
right.
and so on, and it just
yeah.
keeps going.
Okay. All right, so here's the deal, Brett.
Yep.
It is true that, so I come from a family of these folks. It's hereditary, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so by the time I got to the place of realizing that it was a condition that I had,
mm-hmm.
I was doing serious awareness practice.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? So I was not living in the world, keeping a job, having a family, this sort of thing. And
okay.
so I was in a very privileged place in order to do it. Now, X number of years later, however many that is, I know how to manage the energy system such that those two extremes don't happen to me anymore.
Okay.
I think anybody can do it who wants to, but you need to be doing serious awareness practice.
Yeah. Okay.
So I have said recently, and I hope somebody takes me up on this. I would love it if somebody said, "Good, let's bring you into this organization, and you work with these people, and we'll see if what you say is true." I don't think that it would be possible to be depressed and have a serious recording and listening practice.
Okay. Okay.
But you notice serious is the word I keep getting back to.
Yes, I know. I know.
Yeah. Yeah.
I know. That's,
yeah.
Yeah. That's mm-hmm. that's the next obstacle. I mean, that will be the obstacle probably that clears up most other obstacles, which is just my general laziness, resistance to anything that feels like effort, which would be awareness practice or whatever.
Well, here's the deal, Brett. Here's the deal. I don't know if you were here at the beginning of the program, but
I was.
This is just a word to the wise. That's not you. That's not you. That is a system that is in control of you and orchestrating your behaviors by one of the most recent books is I Don't Want To, I Don't Feel Like It, How Resistance Controls Your Life.
I know, I'm reading it right now.
Okay, so then it's really important even just to change the language, because
okay.
it gets a big leg up if you are willing to say, I'm lazy, I'm
okay.
making these decisions. But if you realize that you're listening to a conversation that is controlling your behavior, you're going to be way ahead of the game.
Okay.
All right?
Very
All right. good. Stay in touch, huh? Let me know.
I will. I'll shoot you an email.
All right. Good.
All right.
Thanks,
All
Brett. Take care. Good night.
Okay, thank you. Good night.
Thanks for joining us, Brett. And Sherry, we are almost to the top of the hour here.
Yeah, I think it's even we would be challenged to get another call in. Yeah. All right. Well, thank you, Michael.
Thank you
good
for
Lord willing.
The show. It was great.
Yeah.
Yep.
And we'll talk next week, huh?
Sounds great. Thank you, Sherry.
Okay. All right. Thank you. Good night.
Yeah. Good night.